So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe Ferrero Rocher je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,99 Euro. Außerdem Mionetto Prosecco Spumante Doc je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 5,99 Euro. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne.
A lyrical analysis of Kanye West, a.k.a. genius.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean, and I guess the name of the dog was genius, although Kanye is a genius.
The name of the dog was genius. Yeah.
Is that where the title of the documentary comes from?
I don't think so, but I feel like going back through some of the footage, they were probably just like, oh my God, what a moment. The dog's named Genius. Like, I mean, there was a part of a trailer they showed was the conversation between Ye and Rhymefest, where Rhymefest is like, you're not a genius. Like, you haven't earned being called a genius yet. And Kanye is like, what? Like, why can't I be a genius? And that actually is at the beginning of part three. It's something that they used in a teaser, but I think that might have been where the title came from.
But it's the thing about the dog is cool. I mean, maybe we can get into that at some point because I'm already like getting ahead of myself and like talking about specifics from the documentary. But it is an important
intro
moment.
The episode. Yeah.
All right, you're right. Let's take a step back. Like, where are we, Chris? What is Genius?
Genius is the documentary put together by Cootie Simmons and Chike Oza. It's 20 plus years in the making as Cootie picked up a camera in 1998 as he was recording for Channel Zero and decided that he was going to make a documentary about Kanye as he was interviewing everybody in the hip hop scene. And part one finally dropped today, part one of three, or yesterday.
Yesterday
it came out. But we'll have parts two and three each successive week over the next couple weeks. And we're going to be discussing our reaction, you know, our review, our fan response to part one in this episode.
Perhaps
here today.
More exciting than the documentary itself is just like what we think about it.
yes, that's the, you know, I generally think that's how so many like movie critics feel.
Oh, totally.
Is they're like, oh, you know what? People don't care about the movie. They care about what I have to say about the movie.
The Rex Reeds of the world. I feel like all of my film critic knowledge is extremely outdated. Like, is A.O. Scott still writing film reviews?
I think A.O. Scott is. I don't know if Rex Reed is, but
he might have moved on to bigger and better things.
Yeah. Then my arch nemesis, Mick LaSalle, still writing.
Oh, man. But yeah, I am super excited to talk about this. And Chris, you had already seen the documentary, right? Like, you're way ahead of everybody.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. I just saw Kanye's most recent Instagram post, and I don't know.
Oh, which one?
It's I have a direct question for Mario Armando Lavandera Jr. Do you think jokes about mental health are funny? But I don't know who that is.
Yeah, neither do I. Somebody at SNL, I guess.
We'll find out once we're done recording this episode and later tonight when I make a video on it. But
that is your job.
Yeah. Wait, what had you said? What was the question? Oh, yeah, I saw it. What had you said? I saw Genius Part 1 back when it premiered at the end of January at Sundance. I think it was January 23rd or something. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, and thankfully they did an online screening, and I was lucky enough to snag a ticket. I didn't realize tickets would sell out, which they did, which was strange for an online screening.
Yeah. Wouldn't you want to make as much money as you could?
Yeah. Why restrict that? But yeah, I got to see part one a couple weeks ago, and then got to see part two and three like a week and a half ago.
Nice. So like I knew, I mean, you had already hyped it up, and even though you had hyped it up, or maybe it was because you had hyped it up, I kind of went into it, not that I went into it not expecting much, but I guess I just had no idea what to expect. I didn't know how the story would unfold. Like, I knew it was told in sections, mm-hmm. but I was truly surprised that the movie unfolded in real time. It was very reminiscent of Hoop Dreams, where like you follow these two kids and they're 4 years at high school playing basketball, like trying to make it big. And I gotta say, like, that was probably like my favorite part of it, that it was, I don't know, it even though like that has been done before, obviously in Hoop Dreams, like you and I have seen a lot of documentaries, we see a lot of like film festivals and stuff. Of all the documentaries I've seen, like, this format, this style isn't common at all. And it makes it feel very avant-garde and experimental in the most, like, simple of ways. Like, it really is just, like, taking you on this journey. It's happening in real time. And through that lens, like, with that aesthetic, like, you get a kind of insight into Kanye that you really can't. Yeah, like being a follower of Kanye, like it's a very chaotic it's hard to keep track of everything, like you're always yeah. like weighing one thing against the other, but like this, like you're seeing Kanye, like you truly see him without any filter, without, like, it's him. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, talking about documentary style, I feel like a lot of the documentaries that I see, especially recently on, you know, Netflix, Hulu, even HBO, Peacock, mm-hmm. name all the streaming services. But when we go to film festivals, you have a lot of the breakout, right? They'll be having usually the narrator telling you something, and then you have the confessional kind of things. Like, we're interviewing this person. So you might be getting details of a situation or real-time footage of a situation, and then you break away to, like, the expert that's telling you something, or right. the person that was involved that's reflecting on that time and kind of narrating back what happened, which is very different than what you're saying in terms of, like, the real time, right? We get Cootie narrating some of these things to us, but you don't have Cootie sitting down and being like, so 20 years ago, this is what's going on. You don't have like Jay Ivey in the present day talking about yes. back then. You don't have like these people in the present day telling us what was going on back then and then flashing to those scenes. It's just like, no, we're getting like just a movie, like a straight up movie that's just scene after scene after scene of Kanye in 2002.
Yeah. It's nothing like The Last Dance, which in yeah. retrospect makes The Last Dance feel like, I know they wouldn't have made it unless like Jordan approved it, which meant it kind of became a puff piece in a way. And like you're saying, like all of those typical elements we expect from a documentary, that's all there in The Last Dance. And I mean, I'm a gigantic Bulls fan, like love Michael Jordan. That made that movie a bit of a disappointing experience to me.
Ooh.
Like, it's a tremendous story. Like, there's no denying, like, what they accomplished. But there's an element to that kind of documentary, maybe just when it's not done right, that feels a little, it feels like there's almost a barrier there. Like, you're not getting the true insight. It's not what I feel when I watch Genius. Like, even in the moments where Cootie is talking, he's providing this perception of Kanye, like, back then, like how what he was seeing from Kanye, like it's still existing in real time, and the commentary you're getting, like it just becomes a sort of meta play on a documentary and what it was like to be with Kanye in that moment, and like how important it was to capture these moments. It becomes this very visceral experience that, I don't know, again, it's just like so atypical from what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, but it's, I think what makes it, I keep saying over and over again, I said it when I was watching it, I said it in the review video that I made, I've tweeted about it, that parts one and part two specifically, part three is the one that all the reviewers have been like, oh, it's a change of pace. And some have just recognize that while still praising it, and others have said like part three is weaker. I don't think so. It's just different. It's like weaker in the way that Yeezus is weaker, or that 808s was weaker in the follow up to like, College Dropout, Late Registration, Graduation, right? It's just a little bit different, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily bad. But parts one and part two are so steeped in following Ye around and being this like real-time underdog story that is just infinitely rewatchable. You can just put it on and kind of float in the time and the space and the story of what's going on, which is really something. Like, you don't get that feeling from a lot of like documentaries, movies. I don't know. No. Just having something that feels that drinkable, that watchable, is not an easy thing to create, and yet this has that timelessness about it.
Maybe it just speaks to like what I want from movies in general. Like, I love movies that do that, that are a little plotless in a way, where there isn't like some nadir or some driving, there is a driving force, but there isn't like this disruption, you know, like something that's that becomes like the center of the story outside of the characters and what they're going through. You really are just watching somebody who has this single mission to become huge, to reach an audience with his music, to do good in the world, to become a leader. It's to watch that kind of journey unfold in real time, to just see the progressive elements of life, like as we all experience him. That's, go outside of documentaries, that's not even really that common in movies, period.
Yeah.
Like, it only has like the structure of a movie in scope, but like when you get down to like the aesthetic and the form, I mean you described it perfectly. It's just like, it's just wild to experience that, and it's so comforting and easy. Like you said, drinkable is a great way to put it. It's a kind of movie we're not used to seeing, and God, it makes me so excited for part two. Like I already know what's going to happen, but I'm so excited to watch it. You know?
What do you have, like a specific scene that kind of surprised you the most in part one, where you're just like, oh man, I did not expect like that to hit as much as it did, or like, oh, we just saw that happen.
I think to me, the best scene in the movie, and the moment where like everything kind of crystallized for me and like clarity set in this moment, was when Doug Infinite, when he goes on and he has that, does he go on the radio and just like diss Kanye, or does he release a diss song? Is that what it is?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
Like, yeah, there's definitely like a diss song, and then he's like trashing Ye.
Like, I know all these things about Kanye, like he travels away from Chicago, like goes to New York, tries to make it big. There are all these people in his life. But then when he comes back to Chicago, he has this moment where he feels betrayed by Doug.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think, because again, like, we know Kanye now. People are constantly dissing Kanye. Thousands of headlines a day diss Kanye. He is perhaps the most hated figure in pop culture. It's funny to look back in this moment and to see him so hurt and so feel so betrayed by somebody who calls him out.
Yeah.
And especially in his home city, like this was this monumental betrayal. He felt like, it's just so crazy to see him in this moment dealing with that, trying to make peace with Doug, going on the radio and like trying to make amends and saying like, hey, you're not all seeing the story. He tries to put on this front of like, this is what it's like in the industry, like this is what we do, like you can't just pay attention to the words. Yet just before he goes on the radio, he's hurt by the words. He doesn't understand that that's what happens in the industry. And you're seeing him like put it together in real time. And then the very next scene, goes to visit his mother and gets these words of comfort. And she empowers him and gives this speech, you know, about the giant standing in the mirror, which is easily the best part of the movie, that whole interaction. It's fucking incredible. And reminded me that I need to read Raising Donna before I have a kid. It's so incredible to see when you put those moments side by side, you truly see Kanye and how he became who he became. Like, this, he slowly had to like learn what it was like in the real world, the kind of hardships he was going to face throughout the entire documentary. There are several moments where people say, like, man, when you get to the top, like, people are going to hate you. Like, you got to be ready for it. And Kanye's, you could see it. Like, he's slowly realizing that, yet at the same time has to remember these words of encouragement his mom gave him, especially, you know, looking forward after Donda dies. Like, he has to remember those words from her. Like, it's exactly what we talk about when we're talking about the album Donda and where Kanye's at today. Yeah. All those two scenes, like, it told me everything about Kanye, right? It was amazing.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
That's, as you were describing that, I was just like, oh yeah, that's what we talked about with Donda in terms of the focus on the album. For those of you that may not have listened to the season or heard us talk about this before, is a lot of people were like, oh, the album's about Kanye's like grief over his mother passing, which isn't really accurate.
Right.
But it's more so like Kanye remembering like his mom and the spirit of his mom and the teachings of his mom, and like in this time where he's feeling like he's in jail, where he's feeling like he's like dead inside in some ways, or like in the grave, so to speak. He's recalling Donda's words. He's recalling what Donda taught him, and this is infusing him with this spiritual adjustment that he needs to go and make like necessary changes and strides in his life. And that's exactly what we see in the documentary, as you're describing. Like, that's really what stood out to me, because I was expecting, we've all heard Last Call, right? So a lot of the story is familiar in the sense of, you know, Ye's in Chicago, he goes to New York, he's getting some success as a producer, but people aren't really like fucking with him as a rapper. And you know that he has ability, but he's just not getting the shine that he wants. And you see that in the All Falls Down scene, right? Which seems to be the thing that social media and a lot of media outlets have focused on. It's like the Donda meetup and the All Falls Down walk through the hallways, which we're going to have a few more conversations about that later on. Mm-hmm. But like, that wasn't unexpected to me. It was cool to see, and cool to see actually play out, like, oh, he wasn't lying.
Yeah,
like, he wasn't exaggerating on Last Call, like, damn. Yeah. But I didn't expect to see him go back to Chicago with the momentum that he had had and having the homecoming that he had. Yeah. Right? Because we've talked a lot, especially in our graduation season, about how much graduation is Ye essentially breaking up with Chicago,
mm-hmm,
or realizing that his relationship with Chicago is never going to be the same.
Right.
And that they had something special, but when you leave, you kind of leave and the dynamic changes and can't really go back to what it was. Mm-hmm. So to see him in this documentary come back to Chicago and get such a frosty reception.
Right.
It's not like he wasn't having moments with fans, right? Or like getting show. It's just, it wasn't the heroic return that he thought it was going to be.
Right.
And in fact, he met more controversy from people, like that sense of betrayal. And with when he confronts Doug Infinite, the thing that jumped out to me wasn't that Ye was like angry, right? Especially because we all have this perception of, not we all have this perception, but I think there's a popular perception of beefs in hip hop being aggressive and violent, right? Mm-hmm. Especially from the 90s and everything with like West Coast and East Coast. And you see what happened to Tupac, what happened to Biggie. You see the animosity that was there, at least lyrically between Ye and Nas, right? Mm. So when Doug Infinite says this about Ye, I think there's part of us that expects Ye to go and be like, hey, let's fight. Like, what was that? And it's going to be this aggressive thing. And instead, Kanye goes up to him and is just like, you hurt my feelings.
Kind of tiptoes up to him.
Yeah, he's like, why would you say that? Like, I thought, I didn't mean, like, I gave the interview. I don't know if he was telling the truth, right? When he was saying, like, I mentioned you, but the interviewer just didn't include that I mentioned you. I don't know if that's just the thing that you say when you're, like, 25, 26.
Kanye
like
said that to Doug, right?
Yeah, he said that to Doug. Like, no, I mentioned you. They just didn't put it in. Like, and now you're mad at me for them not, like, for them editing something, which... You know, maybe he did say it, maybe he didn't. He's just like covering his bases, trying to like get on Doug's good side. But you can see like Doug goes from angry to genuinely like
needs to be a father figure.
Yeah. He goes and he like just takes Ye around the corner and starts talking with him and like building him up. And you see him put on his like mentor cap. And that was such like a sweet moment. It's making me kind of tear up.
It's incredible. Just thinking of,
like, that's huge. And part three really gets into some of the thematics of the impact that parents have, but I would argue that it goes beyond just like the impact parents have, but the impact that like you have people that can open doors for you and people that can close doors for you, and that at a certain point you're the person that needs the door open, and you eventually become the person that can like open and close doors for others, whether it's your very own child, whether it's, you know, someone that you're mentoring, and to be aware of that power that you have. And Doug Infinite in that moment, taking the time to say, all right, instead of closing this door on Kanye, I'm going to like give him advice. I'm going to build him up. Was really nice to see and just kind of like encapsulated to me like the kind-heartedness of Ye that really is at the core. As much as he can wild out, as much as he can cross lines and cause problems, I think we all kind of like a lot of fans know that at his core, like, he's the guy that wants to make people happy, that doesn't want to upset people, even though he does at this point. Like, he would ideally want people to be like happy and not make individuals upset. So that was like such a powerful moment. And then, as you said, heading from like all of this controversy, all the disappointments in New York, the disappointment in returning to Chicago, to Donda being this kind of climactic Obi-Wan Kenobi Yoda figure. It's just amazing. Because there's a version of this story that plays out where like Donda's kind of present throughout. And it's not like that's the first time we see her in the documentary, right?
But I think it might be, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Because I was wondering that while watching it. I was like, where is Donda? But she comes at like just the right moment. Like, it was almost like they were waiting for her entrance.
Right. Like, it, she just... That... The power that she has in that moment of being the one to help Kanye through that, and that it's not just like a 2 minute scene, right? That really linger in the conversation and in the moment and get to sit there with them.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
That's, I mean, that what you're describing is, again, exactly what I want from movies. Like, to let that conversation play out, to see all of it. This is the problem with most movies to me, is like there is this need to only give you information, like what's important for driving the plot forward, as opposed to existing with characters and letting us like see into their souls, like how they are, how they maneuver, how they function. Forgive me for this. I cannot think of a better movie example. If I could sit here for a while, I probably could, but I'm just going to go with it. Magic Mike XXL is one of my absolute favorite movies of all time because it does this particular thing so well. It's something I just never see in movies, and the movie does it so well, where there it's kind of a plotless movie in a way. Like, there is a plot, I guess. They're going to this convention, but along the way, everything that happens, like, isn't super important. And a lot of the times we're just seeing them, like, sitting in rooms, interacting with people, like, talking about themselves. It's all just character work the whole time. Beautifully shot, by the way, which is the other reason that movie's incredible. But it's incredible to just see people, like, exposing themselves. You get to know these people so intimately in such a way that is... I mean, when you see it, you'll know it. Like, it's so uncommon to see a movie like this. So to have these moments with Kanye and Donda, like, think about all the stuff they talk about. Like, Kanye is telling the story about Jay-Z hearing the beat to Izzo, you know, and, like, playing it out, like, and doing an actually a really good Jay-Z impression. That was the other thing I took away from this movie is Kanye's really good at impressions. There were a couple he did that were just, like, cracking me up. His Stevie Wonder impression. That was cracking me up.
Yeah.
But then, like, Donda starts rapping and they're rapping together. They're, like, remembering a song together. And then she says something like, oh, you play tracks like Jordan shoots free throws. And then she talks about this metaphor of a giant looking in the mirror. And she says the metaphor, but doesn't explain it, talks for a while. And then towards the end, like, makes Kanye understand what she means by the metaphor. And how you can, like, fly and be on the ground at the same time. Like, you watch this whole meandering conversation play out. And none of it's, like, again, there's no real plot, right? None of it's important. You don't learn anything about, like, the end goal of the story. And, like, it's just, you're just there. You're there in a room with Kanye and his mom. And you're seeing how he became who he became. I just, like... I don't even think Hoop Dreams did something like that. Like, I don't know if there are any scenes where you just sit with somebody for that long in a single moment. And I think that's why it's Donda's entrance in the movie and why Cootie used so much of the scene, because, like, he knew it was important. He was there. he saw all the little gears in Donda and her son's relationship. Like, she saw, he was experiencing how important this moment was in real time, that he knew it would be important to just include that much of it in the documentary. Like, we kind of experienced it like Cootie experienced it. You know, you move throughout all these different phases of Kanye, snapshot here, snapshot here, snapshot here, except this moment. Like, we're going to sit here for a little bit and experience this. Like, that is just not something you see in movies. It's so important to have that kind of stuff.
I was laughing because you're talking about Magic Mike XXL and you're just like, you know, to have them expose themselves. I was like, that is something that they do in Magic, in the Magic Mike movies.
In more ways than one.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, that's, I think one of the key things this documentary does is that it knows how to, like, when to sit in a scene, right? Like, same thing with the Rockefeller, like, him playing All Falls Down, that it's not just a 1 minute scene that we just kind of get this idea of him, like, playing it and people not reacting, or it could have cut through that scene a lot quicker, but instead it really steeps you.
You're right. Yeah.
And, like, we're walking into the office, we're going into somebody's office, we're going to play the song. They're just going to kind of stare at Kanye. And I love that I think it's the first woman, was it, like, Shaka Pilgrim? Was that her name?
Maybe.
Which she's been trending after the documentary came out. Because you kind of see her just, like, not reacting. And then you have somebody come and knock on the door. And it reminded me of being at the bar when you see, like, a guy talking to a girl and the friend comes up to kind of rescue the girl. Yeah. Where Ye's just playing this music and somebody's just like, oh, do you need save from this, like, artist playing you music? They always come in here and do this. And they start talking and interacting, working. Like, these are working professionals with, like, jobs to do. And you just see Ye be like, okay, and take his tape and go to the next, like, office and try and do the same thing. One of the interesting things about this scene, which has been talked about a lot on social media, just like, oh, all these people didn't realize he's playing All Falls Down.
Yeah.
All Falls Down. There was one popular tweet that had like 90,000 likes that was saying that this is an important reminder that most of the people that are professionals aren't good at their jobs. Right. Or like in the music industry, a lot of these people like can't recognize something great until they're told it's great.
Right.
There's all these negative responses to it. But this guy, Wayno, said, LMAO, the context behind this is he played this song in the office and did this with a camera crew like 10 times. How many times can you have a crazy reaction to something you've heard 10 times? It was kind of annoying at that point. And somebody goes on to say, so why were they reacting as if it was their first time hearing it? The Alexis line had them in shock, and Wayno responds with, because it might have been a few people's first time hearing it, but he did that shit all the time. He did it at Def Jam on both of their floors. He did that at Universal. He did that all the time. And somebody said, was it being played on the radio? And he goes, no, but he came into the office and did the same thing he did in that video numerous times. And somebody says it makes it even more legendary. And he wasn't after the initial reactions. He was trying to get a deal, so he was going to keep doing it until he got what he was after. And Wayno says, man, he was already signed at that point. And the person's like, as a rapper? And he goes, yes, I used to work for Rockefeller. I'm also in that clip. Like, Wayno's actually in the clip that we see in the documentary. And he goes, he wasn't just a producer. He had just done the Blueprint album and everybody wanted beats from him. He was just a producer. He was like Metro Boomin after going on that Future run. And I'm really torn because on the one hand, like, Wayno was there, right? Mm-hmm. And I get what he's saying about, like, you know, he's come in and done that like 10 times. What are people supposed to do? But I think that's kind of the point, right? You would expect, if he came in and played All Falls Down, that somebody would be like, oh, you're really good. Let's like get things going. But that didn't happen the first time. It didn't happen the second time or the third, fourth, fifth, which is why he's still there doing it. And it seems to imply that this is out of order, right? Because part one ends with Ye getting signed as a rapper. Mm-hmm. And Wayno saying that at this point, Ye was already signed as a rapper. Which either means that Wayno is right and like the Genius team just put that scene out of time and put it ahead of Kanye being signed when it was actually afterwards, which happens in documentaries all the time, right? Like, you might move that to give the idea of what it was like for him, even if that wasn't exactly like when it took place. Or it's possible that Wayno just like isn't quite remembering the timeline as clearly. Mm-hmm. And like this specific instance was before he was signed as a rapper. But even then, what we see in part two is that when Ye's signed as a rapper, they're still not opening up his budget. They didn't give him the ability to go and make the College Dropout. In fact, he was still so shackled that he was having to produce more than ever before and had to start like working on the College Dropout by getting to the studio ahead of the people he was supposed to be producing for and using their studio time. So he would get like 10 minutes of doing things for his album ahead of having to like produce something for someone else.
Wow.
So even if he was signed as an artist, nobody was taking him seriously as a rapper on the Rockefeller label until after the Through the Wire video came out. And at that point, Dame Dash is like, oh, we'll give you a budget. But so whether or not Kanye was signed as a rapper at that point,
why would he be doing any of that if he was signed?
It doesn't make much sense, right? The only thing would be that he's trying to get somebody to be like, oh, okay, go make your album, since he didn't have his budget. So it would have been one of the things he was doing to try to get his budget opened up. But I like to believe that it happened as presented in the documentary.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I mean, I guess people just say I'm dick riding, but I have a hard time believing that, like, more from like Cootie's standpoint, that he would like purposely put things out of order to kind of spice up the story. Anyway, no matter what the case is, I was thinking about this. On some level, I kind of sympathize with the people in the office. Like, you're trying to do your job and this dude is just coming in and rapping at you. Like, maybe that's annoying. But at the same time, All Falls Down, nothing sounded like that. Like,
yeah,
Kanye truly had a sound that sounded like nothing else. And it would go on. Like, he would go on to prove that he had a sound because College Dropout was gigantic and he defined the sound for so many people moving forward. Like, it is crazy to think that, like, you could hear him live in that moment doing something that's not really been done in hip hop and not have a more insane reaction, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, even if it was his 10th time playing like that in the office, it's like, yeah, you should have done more then. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Why is he still having to come and play it?
It's wild.
Yeah. But that's a. It's just very fascinating stuff. I honestly was surprised, and maybe it's just a limitation of the documentary, right? Like how much they could include or how much like Kudi got access, but I kind of expected more Jay-Z presence.
Oh yeah, right.
Because we know that Ye worked on Blueprint, he worked on the Black Album. I mean, I guess we did get to see that moment where Kanye, or maybe that's part two, where Kanye's like rapping for Jay.
No, that must be part two.
That's part two. Okay. Okay. But yeah, I was expecting a little more Jay in that, but it's such a good, and then part two is just like a continuation. Yeah. It's just like picks up right where you leave off and you keep going.
Yeah. I think the other important scene, I guess Donda is like the star of this in a way, because like the other really important scene, and Kudi notes it in the moment, is when he goes to Connie's childhood home.
Yeah.
And him and Donda are sitting there. And again, you're kind of just like watching them have these conversations, like, again, reflecting on things that don't matter, like Kanye winning talent shows and getting mad when he doesn't win talent shows. Like all that stuff is like so endearing and funny and insightful. But I did think it was interesting that they talk about their dog when he was a kid. The dog's name was Genius, although I don't know if it's spelled J-E-E-N. I'm not sure about that
right.
One. But that the dog, I guess the metaphor being applied was that they called the dog Genius because it knew how to break out of the yard and get loose.
Yeah. Yeah. No matter what they did, it always knew how to get out.
Yeah. And it becomes this like... like, it's the perfect way to describe Kanye. Like, you can't hold him down. Throughout the entire documentary, there are people trying to put him in a box. Like, no, you're a producer. You can't be bigger. Like, they're hearing him rap. They're hearing something incredible. And at the same time being like, but we can't. Like, sorry, you're a producer. Like, this isn't how it works. It's incredible to watch. It was so crazy to watch it happen over and over and over. Like, people are just like, wow, you're amazing. Scarface is like, oh man, Family Business, like, that was incredible, and then just walks away and never talks to Ye again, you know. It's crazy to watch it over and over, and that's this Kanye becomes like this dog in a way. Like, you can't just hold him in this yard. He's going to break free eventually. Someone just has to finally give him a shot. He's going to, as he said, like, will it into existence. He's going to make it happen. Like, you just keep going and going and going until it happens.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
And yeah, it's a good connection being made. Like, the boxes he's placed in, the ways in which he's fenced in. Mm. And it didn't stop with just being a rapper, right? We talked about it in terms of like, oh, he can't get into fashion.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be a rapper that's into fashion. Oh, and you can't be like someone that's into fashion that's a rapper that's now a designer. And then he breaks through that. And then he wanted to be a business person. They're like, no.
Yeah.
And now he's like... billions of dollars. That is really interesting to make that like connection, right? And then you also have the foreshadowing where Kanye talks about like dropping his last name, like, yeah, just being Ye. Like, so, 2002, he's talking about just being yay.
Although he was mad that on that sheet of paper, they just called him Kanye. And he was like, why not just call me yay? And I was like, huh, the irony.
Who was it? It was the other artist where he's like, you know, you don't say, like, was it Jermaine Dupri or someone?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, you don't just say, like, featuring Jermaine.
But going back to the dog named Genius, the other awesome part of, like, that grand metaphor that's just, like, naturally playing out in that moment is, like, they're at Kanye's childhood home.
Yeah.
Like, Kanye not only needed to, like, break out of this box, but, like, he, again, you know, we're talking about graduation and even looking forward to this moment of the Donda listening party where he burns his childhood home. It kind of, it's just so poetic and happenstance that, like, all this is happening, that you can connect this dog named Genius and its desire to break free from the art. Like that literally happened at Kanye's childhood home. He needed to break free from that environment in a way, not like abandon his childhood home in Chicago and Donda's teaching, but like he needed to graduate from that existence in a way, like he talks about in the album Graduation.
Yeah,
it's not an easy thing to understand, like that to achieve something greater, like you kind of have to abandon who you are in a way, like what's familiar to you, like what you grew up understanding is like true and right. Like the whole point of this documentary just slowly becomes that, like, if Kanye wants to achieve the same, he has to ignore all of the rules, what everybody tells him was right. Like, what is, in a way, he has to abandon his foundation and, like, build a new one. Like, he has to realize that. Like, that is not an easy thing for anybody to realize. And 99% of people were like, we'll probably never do something like that. Like, Lauren and I were talking about it after the documentary. Lauren's my wife, by the way. And how, like, when someone becomes famous, like, that didn't happen on accident. Like, very few people become famous, become celebrities. Like, they had to put in this work that so many other people in the world don't put in. It didn't happen by accident. You have to completely invest yourself in something. And Kanye is that to, like, the absolute nth level. Like, he did it more than anybody could have ever dreamed it was possible of doing. So this dog is that.
It's something too. I look at this with people that I grew up with in Ohio, where a lot of them, you had some people that never wanted to leave, right? They had a choice of, they could stay with what was comfortable and familiar. Like, you don't want to go that far. You don't want to be more than an hour from your parents.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be more than an hour from, like, the things that you kind of know, the people that you love. And what the cost of that can often be the opportunities that you have to do more things, right? Not just, like, travel or eat at, like, a nice restaurant kind of thing, but just, like, job opportunities.
Right.
And that there's often this trade-off between the people that I know that went somewhere different, like moved states away, countries away, and the career opportunities that ended up affording them and the life opportunities that ended up affording them in terms of leveling up to some degree, that came with the cost of disconnecting from that person that they were, right? Like, you're still your parents' child, but you're not there in that role day in and day out. You still have all your friends back home, but, like, you're not there seeing them day in and day out. So you do lose part of yourself, right?
Right.
And that life that you had known and had, at the cost of, you know, hopefully pursuing something greater and more. And that's always going to be kind of the trade-off of that. It's rare to have it be where you can just stay where you were, stay where you grew up, stay with who you know, your family, and achieve like immense things. Usually there's some kind of relocation that needs to take place just to have other opportunities. Like, I talked about this with some friends back home, like the amount of just entry level $40,000 to $50,000 a year jobs in Canal Fulton, Ohio are very small. And even finding something like that in like Canton or Akron, like very difficult. But if you move out to Austin, there's all of these tech companies hiring people at like $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 just to come in and cold call.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not a huge thing, right? Like, we're not talking on the scale of like moving to New York to become a music producer and a successful musician, but just like, if you move from Ohio to Austin and get this job that's paying you $40,000 and then stay there for 2 years, you can maybe be at a job that's now paying you six figures just because of how that goes. And it's like, by making a simple move, you suddenly allowed yourself these whole new opportunities. And that's kind of the, right, like the grounded version of what we see in Kanye's story. Kanye's story, as you said, is like the nth degree extreme version of this, where you leave everything behind to pursue something that changes your life forever. And for him, it's music superstardom, like into the fashion world, into the business world. But that doesn't mean it can't apply to others in much smaller, more like familiar ways of just like, I left my small town for a larger city with more opportunities and got like a good job, and it changed kind of the course and future of my life. You and Lauren experienced a similar thing with like moving out to Iowa and her taking that job out there, and the career opportunities that's allowed for y'all.
Yeah, just followed her around all over the Midwest.
Yes, you did.
But yeah, at the same time, though, because it's really tough for a lot of people to move away from home. I mean, it's tough for anybody to move away from home, like moving away from anything familiar. No matter how excited you are to experience something new, like you lose something. You have to abandon something when you do that and start fresh. Again, Kanye on this nth level, like this extreme story, like it's a big deal for him to like not be in Chicago. They spend so much time talking about Chicago and planting that he has so many friends in Chicago and so many people that helped him rise up, that when he returns to Chicago and feels betrayed, like people feel betrayed by Kanye and Kanye feels betrayed by that. Like you really sacrifice something when you make these kinds of moves. Which again, just makes me think forward to him burning the house and kind of like burning who he is and always not being afraid to start anew. Like that fearlessness is not there in part one. Like you can tell it troubles him that these things happen. He's deeply hurt when someone talks bad about him back from Chicago. He wants to be remembered as this person, but to achieve this greater thing, like he has to slowly realize like you kind of have to let go of that a little bit. Like you need to represent something. You need to represent something bigger. You need to mean more to more people in the world than just like this core unit. It's just to watch somebody again learning that lesson in real time. That is just such a treat in terms of movies.
Yeah. Kanye just posted to Instagram again and he changed the picture from black and white to color. And it turns out Mario Armando Lavandera Jr. is just Perez Hilton.
Oh, got it.
So apparently Perez Hilton said something about Kanye that Ye is not a fan of.
Yeah, he was going after TMZ too, right?
Yeah, earlier he deleted those posts and was like, you're godless.
You're godless, that's right. Oh, man. God, I felt like I was going to say something else, but I can't remember what it was. There's just so much to cover. Like, it's just crazy. Like, the documentary seemingly doesn't, like, move a lot. Like, only a couple years pass. And it's, again, mostly stuff I know about Kanye. Yet I feel like I'm constantly learning these new things about Kanye.
Yeah, because it's like, we know a lot of the broad strokes, but to get into the nitty-gritty of just, like, car rides and parties and studio sessions in a very focused period of time, is just an entirely different view than what we've ever really had before. It's a different view, different degree of access. And that continues very well into part two.
Yeah, I'm excited. I will say the other...
1 week away.
Yeah. The other best part of this movie is that Scarface scene.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly because Scarface is so fucking funny. Like, he notices Kanye's retainer sitting there. He's like, what's that? And Kanye's like, my retainer. He's like, ugh, like, don't put that there. Like, what are you doing? That's gross.
Right. Father figure moment.
It was also really crazy to watch somebody just have apathy for the production of Jesus Walks. Like, he heard it and he's just like, nah.
Yeah.
Like, I would expect Scarface to be more on a track like that than Family Business. But he hears Family Business and Kanye rapping the Family Business. I mean, I've always liked Family Business. I maybe haven't liked it as much as other people do. But that scene in that movie really made me love that movie. I think I infinitely just like love that movie more now because of that scene.
Or the song.
The song Family.
You were saying you love the movie more because of that scene. And it was like you love the song more because of that scene. Yeah.
Unless there's a movie called Family Business, I would watch that.
That was really startling because I was expecting like, I mean, we know that Scarface isn't on either of those like songs.
Yeah.
So I was like, how is this going to go to where like Scarface is just not going, he's not going to like either. And then he liked Family Business, but I ended up not even giving Ye a verse for it. It's just striking, startling. Yeah. I wonder if Scarface has said anything about it. Like,
he seemed blown away by Family Business. He was sitting there just like, his face was just like, man, like that was incredible.
So. Yeah, like, oh my goodness. Like, you made this? Like,
you wow. rap? Like, holy shit. Again, that's just another moment where like someone sees the raw talent, but also it's just like, but you're a producer, you're a nobody. Like, I'm not going to be on your song.
Yeah, like, that's, part two, you get a few more reactions. I don't want to, I guess, necessarily spoil for people that don't want to know anything. So I'm going to do this thing where I put my hands over my ears, if you're watching the video, and just wait for me to take my hands off my ears. But,
and if you're listening to the podcast, you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. but you have this moment where he plays, I forget the song. Why am I forgetting the song? I think it might be Slow Jams for Pharrell. And Pharrell just like freaks out.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I had no idea. I'm so sorry. I had no idea. Like it's the reaction you've been wanting everybody to have this entire time that nobody has had. Yeah. And Pharrell finally like is the one. It just like gushes, and it's this great like extended scene. Like you're hearing him. I need to watch it again.
Damn, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, which I wonder if it's actually still on my Netflix account.
The same thing happens in that two word scene, which I guess people have already seen that scene.
Yeah,
but still, like I had already seen that scene, but watching it again, like I got goosebumps all over again. Like you feel how much Kanye feels those words and like the genuine just like shock on everybody's faces and how Mos Def was just like, Jesus, like, whoa. Like, it was almost like it was the first time Mos Def was hearing that verse.
Yeah. And he's just like, this guy just do, did he just do that?
I just like that scene. That made me love two words more too.
It did. It did. I keep trying to like, if anybody watching the video, I'm trying to do like a shocked Mos Def face.
Like that's the other great part of this movie is that kind of shock. You don't typically see that. Like you don't see it in movies because movies are people acting, so it's not real. But you don't really see that in documentaries that often. Like these looks on people's faces where in this moment they're recognizing how incredibly talented Kanye West is. This guy who will go on to become arguably the most talented musician ever, like in a lot of people's opinions, like to witness this moment where Scarface hears Family Business, Mos Def hears Two Words. I don't know. I don't remember what else there was, but like the intimacy of seeing just like the shock on someone's face, like, oh my God, that is precious.
Yeah. It's just one of those like moments that's sweeter than old Sadie. Is that the is that the line?
I think that's the line.
Yeah.
Although I'm blanking on what it's from.
Sweeter than old Sadie. It's a oh no. It's a late registration song, right?
Yeah.
No. College dropout song? Oh my God. Oh no.
Kanye experts over here.
Yeah. You know, we're the number one scholars of his discography.
Than old Sadie. Let's see. Let's see. Let's get this. Let's just get this. Oh, last call. That is a shame. We should know that.
I'm so sorry. If I had my Kanye fan card right by me, I would turn it in right now.
I feel like my punishment should be listening to Last Call on loop for like 8 straight hours, which wouldn't be a punishment at all, so I accept.
It would not be. I'm in the Gap like Banana Republic and Old Navy, and ooh, it came out sweeter like old Sadie. Oh man, I'd even get the line wrong right as I'm reading it. It come out sweeter than old Sadie. Nice as Bun B when I met him at the Source Awards. Girl he had with him. Ass could have won the Horse Awards.
You said that so matter-of-factly. Ass could have won the Horse Awards.
Ass could have won the Horse Awards. It's just it's a statement of fact, you know?
Oh, man.
Statement of fact.
I'm so excited for the rest of this movie.
Yeah, I'm excited for you and everyone else to get to see it. So, I mean, if y'all have some favorite moments from the documentary, let us know what they are. And if you have any gripes, keep that shit to yourself.
You can complain to me, but yeah, don't complain. Chris is sensitive. You just leave him alone.
I have met Cootie and Chike in person. I will not stand for any disparagement of their work.
Oh, critiques of Cootie and Chike? Oh, I agree. Keep that to yourself. I think you meant of us.
Well, oh yeah, of us. Go ahead and say it. Say what needs to be said, you know?
Absolutely. And a lot needs to be said.
Too much. Write a book. All right. Any final thoughts? Any last calls?
Let's go ahead and put on the last call music under here. Yeah, I just it's truly a treat. Like in all seriousness, like I wish I could meet Cootie and Chike and just like thank them for making a movie like this kind of movie isn't easy to make. Like as much as it seems like oh, all they're doing is just showing scenes unfold. Like these scenes we watch play out in real time, they're like expertly placed in a narrative they're putting together. Like to put together a movie like this, they're creating this portrait of Kanye that just hasn't been done. Like it's so incredible. Again, he might be the most important musician of all time, and they have made something that truly honors that. Like kudos
indeed. Well then,
all right. Well, until part two, keep or not keep it wavy, stay wavy.
Keep it loopy.
And they ask me, they ask me, they ask me. I tell them, raise your glasses, your glasses, your glasses to the sky. This is the last call for alcohol.